Open your Bible to 1 Samuel, if you will. 1 Samuel and chapter 17. I know the pastor is in the book of 1 Samuel, but it'll be 6 months before he gets to chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. One of the young people asked when I came in tonight, are you going to give us any eye stories? I'll share one eye story to satisfy them. For those of you who've been here a long time, you remember Bobby Finch, Rob Diaz, who were on staff. They traveled with me for a number of years. Bobby at that time was living down in Hampton. Rob was living in Indianapolis, and we would meet at the meetings. We had flown into Detroit for a meeting in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Bobby and I had gotten there. Our flight was on time, but Rob had been delayed. We heard that it was going to be a couple of hours before he got there, so we decided we'd go ahead and get the rental car, and we'd just find us a restaurant nearby. And so we found a Bob Evans restaurant nearby, sat down in the middle of the afternoon, I guess probably it was 2:30, 3 o'clock, and this teenage waitress comes to the table. And she looked at me and she said, what would you like? And I said, I'd like apple pie and coffee. And she did something I've never seen a waitress do. She had her pad in her hand, her pen in her hand, and she just stared at the ceiling. For 15 seconds, she just stared at the ceiling. And I began to think, wow, it takes a long time for apple pie and coffee to compute with her brain. I said, excuse me. I said, I'd like apple pie and coffee. She said, I heard you. Where are you from? And I'm thinking, what business is it of hers where I'm from? I just want apple pie and coffee. I said, I'm from Washington, D.C., and I'm with the CIA. She did the same thing. She stared at the ceiling. I said, excuse me, have you heard of the CIA? She says, I think so. Have you heard of the FBI? Oh, I've heard of the FBI. I said, well, I'm with the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and I'm undercover. That's the reason I'm wearing my patch, so no one recognizes who I am. And she looked at me. I didn't recognize you. Well, of course you didn't recognize me. I've never seen her in my life. But I caught her name on her name tag. Her name was Angela. And I said, Angela, I'll have to be honest with you. We have been sent here today to check up on you. Immediately, her countenance changed. She said, wait just 1 minute. I paid the fine. And she told us what it was for. Bobby is sitting across the table. And you know how big Bobby is. Bobby starts laughing. And when Bobby laughs, everything moves on the table. I mean, you would think she would look at him and realize the whole thing's a joke. She never caught on. I just said, Angela, I'm aware of that. I read that in my report this morning. But what I'm most concerned about is the girl you hang around. Now, wait just a minute. She served her time in youth detention center, and all of that's behind her. I had no idea what I'd walked into. I said, Angela, would you get my apple pie and coffee? Yeah, I'll be right back. She was gone. We did our best to try to convince that girl that I was not with the CIA. But she wouldn't buy it. She said, you've got to be with the CIA. There's no way you could know that much about me and not be with the CIA. I didn't know anything about her except what she told me. By the way, she was not a brunette. I don't know what you're laughing at. I just said she's not a brunette. And she didn't have black hair or red. It was actually purple. So we have no idea what color hair was. 1 Samuel chapter 17 is an interesting passage. Very familiar passage, but yet I hope you see it tonight in an entirely different light. I call it supernatural victory. 1 Samuel chapter 17. But understand this, supernatural victory is not unnatural. God naturally wants to give His children supernatural victory. If you'd like an idea of something that's rather unnatural, but yet proves how God takes care of His own, it happened in Birmingham, Alabama, Dr. Jack LeGrand. Dr. Jack LeGrand was the pastor of the Glen Iris Baptist Church. They have a television station there. They have a radio ministry there. And the radio staff was taking vacation, so he and his wife decided they would bring the radio station on the air in the early morning hours, 5 a.m. They actually lived nearer to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, than Birmingham, So rather than driving in the early morning hours, they decided they would stay in the prophet's chamber at the church. It was during one of the nights the building was broken into. It was Mrs. LeGrand who heard the noise first, and she said, Jack, somebody's in the building. He woke up. He heard the noise. He got out of bed. He walked out into the church school hallway, and the door of the prophet's chamber closed and locked behind him. He tiptoed down the hallway to where the office was, and there was a glass window. And he peeked around the glass window, and sure enough, there was a big man in there with a screwdriver opening up the drawers, obviously seeking to rob them. He knew he needed to call the police. So he goes down the hallway, and every door where there was a phone inside, every door was locked. As he had walked down the hallway, he had walked into darkness. There were no lights, no windows, no doors at that end of the hallway. At the other end of the hallway, there were the two glass doors, so the night lights were shining in from the outside. You could see at that end. The robber stepped out into the hallway with him. It dawned on him that he could not be seen, and so he just got in the corner, and he tried to hide as best he could, and the man came right down the hallway checking the same doors he had just checked. He said, I broke out into a sweat. He said, I knew I was probably going to get killed. My wife was probably going to get killed. And he said, I started praying that he'd turn around and go the other way, but he kept coming. He said, I guess I lost my mind. I just jumped out in the middle of the hallway, threw my hand in there and said, stop right there, I'll blow your brains out. Scared the guy to death. He said, put your nose against the wall, put your hands against the wall, or I'll shoot you. Immediately, the guy goes to the wall. Please don't shoot. Puts his hands against the wall, nose against the wall, and starts begging for his life. If you turn around, I'll shoot you right here. Honey, call the police while I hold the gun on him. He said, I am so glad she didn't step out in the hallway and say, Jack, where'd you get a gun? He held his hand like that. He said it seemed like an eternity before the police got there. It was only a few minutes. His wife let them in. They turned on the lights, and Dr. LeGrand said, hey, fella, how do you like my gun? It hit the front page of the Birmingham Times, preacher hose robber at finger point. Now, that's rather unnatural. That's not apt to happen to a person twice in his lifetime, and certainly not with Dr. LeGrand. He's with the Lord today. I've told that story over and over again. The last time I was speaking there, Mrs. LeGrand came to me, and she says, I've heard you tell the story many times, but there's one thing you always leave out. I said, what's that? When he was in the hallway, all he had on was his boxer shorts, and he had to hold them up with one hand. I said, that's a picture I don't even want. But it also shows how God supernaturally takes care of His children. And that's what we find in this story. Let me point out some things that oftentimes go unnoticed. Notice, if you will, in verse 4. There went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath. I want you to underline the word champion and just take note of something that's rather interesting. Nowhere in chapter 17 is the word giant used. As a matter of fact, you can search through the scriptures and you'll find no passage anywhere where Goliath is ever referred to as a giant. Now, I understand there were families of giants. I understand that. But in this passage, the word is never used. I purposefully do not want to use the word either. You know why? Because sometimes when we think of a giant of a problem, we think of a problem for which there is little or no solution. But as far as God's concerned, there are no giants. As far as God's concerned, there are no problems bigger than He. So let's not use the word giant. But read on. Whose height was 6 cubits and a span, 9.5 feet tall. Brother Steve, he must be that word you're not going to use because he's 9.5 feet tall. I know. But I'm not going to call him a giant. But he's 9.5 feet. Okay. I'll call him a big man. Say that together. Goliath is a big man. All together. Goliath is a big man. Emphasize the word big. Goliath is a big man. Look at verse 5. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head. And he was armed, watch this carefully, with a coat of mail. One garment. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. That's 150 pounds. Now, take one look at me. I weigh 167 pounds. granite. It's all iron, steel, brass, and muscle. But this guy is wearing one garment that weighs almost as much as I weigh. Do you understand now why everybody was so scared of him? Would you want to fight somebody whose clothes outweighed you? He is a big man with heavy clothes. Say that together. He is a big man with heavy clothes. Emphasize the word big and heavy. He is a big man with heavy clothes. Read on a little bit further. Verse 7. The staff, the handle, the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. Interesting, isn't it, that the Bible takes time to point out the size of the handle. What does that tell you about his hands? He must have had massive hands. He's a big man, heavy clothes, massive hands. Say that together. He's a big man, heavy clothes, massive hands. Go down to verse 24. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, underline the phrase, fled from him. Interesting phrase. When they saw the man, all of God's people, all of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him. And were so afraid. Now David has arrived, verse 25, and all the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely defy Israel as he come up. And it shall be that the man that killeth him, three things are offered. Notice the three things. Number one, the king will enrich him with great riches. Hey, man, if any of you will take the challenge and go fight their champion, I'll make you rich beyond your wildest imagination. Wonderful offer. Probably all the men liked it. Notice the end of that same verse. And make his father's house free in Israel. No taxes. You can have all that money and no taxes. I'm sure everyone would like that offer even today. But notice sandwich psychology. What is sandwiched between the two? Number one, I'll make you rich. Yes. Number three, no taxes. Yes. And in the middle, and we'll give him his daughter. You can marry my daughter. Which of the three do you think caused the men not to want to fight? I'll make you rich. Yes. No taxes. Yes. You can marry my daughter. I'm not fighting. No way am I going. But notice the next verse. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what? I believe in shock. What? What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? What? The king has stooped so low, he's offering money. He stooped so low, he's offering the freedom of taxation, even willing to give his daughter away. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the army of the living God? David sees something no one else sees. And I'm convinced we don't see it as David saw it. So let's illustrate it. Brother Vandenberg, I need you to come back. I needed a tall man. Yep. All of your height, bring it with you. And find the littlest person you can find on your way up here. A little young man to illustrate the story of David and Goliath. He has found one. So here comes David and Goliath. And Brother Vandenberg, you'll stand up here. And you just stay right down there on the bottom to illustrate the story. Before us, you have David and Goliath. Every eye right now on Goliath. Every eye. And look at Goliath and say, Goliath is a big man. Together, Goliath is a big man. Look at the clothes he's wearing. Those are heavy clothes. Show them the hands. Massive, massive hands. Say it together. Massive, massive hands. But the problem is, as you've always been taught, you're looking at the wrong one. This is not Goliath. This is Goliath. See, get the story right. The big, ugly one is Goliath. And the little one is David. No, I have the story right. This is Goliath. Granted, he's 9.5 feet tall. Look at the clothes he's wearing. Those are heavy clothes. And look at the hands. Massive, massive hands. But then David and his God arrive. And notice how much bigger David and his God appear to be to the little 9.5 foot squirt. If you want a giant in the story, there is one. It's God. God is the one who is absolutely bigger than all. And so when David saw Goliath, he said, "Who is he that he should defy the army of the living God? My God can take him out just like that. He's nothing compared to my God." I'm convinced that often we see Goliath from Saul's point of view, not from David's point of view. Thank you, Goliath. You can have a seat. Thank you, David. Sorry for my insult, you handsome fellow. Hence, the first point. My God is able. Say that with me. My God is able. Say it again. My God is able. I'm going to do with you what I often do when I'm on the road. I'm going to make all of us uncomfortable together. I want you to take your finger, like I'm going to do it right now, and I want you to point your finger. My God is able. Everybody do it so no one feels like an idiot, all right? Here we go. Are you ready? My God is able. Therein lies your success. If you believe, because it's based on faith and based on believing in God, if you believe that God can do anything, then you're on the path to having spiritual victories in your life. We often wallow in doubt, wonder if God really can do things. You know, as I have traveled and as I've witnessed things over the years, I've seen God do some miraculous, miraculous, miraculous things. A number of years ago, we lived in Memphis, Tennessee, Calvary Baptist Church. We had a family come and give their testimony at our church. Her name was Marilyn Ford. Her husband was a Southern Baptist pastor in Memphis, Tennessee. We had her come give her testimony. She had been blind since birth. She and her husband had children that had already left the home. One night, Marilyn says to her husband, "Honey, you know there's one thing we've never done?" He said, "What's that?" "We've never prayed and asked God to give me my eyesight." And he said as pastor, "Well, honey, some things you just have to accept from the Lord." He said, "But don't you believe God can give me my sight?" He said, being the spiritual leader and the pastor of the church, "Yes, I believe that God could do that." "Well, let's pray and let's just ask God to give me my sight." So she got down on her knees beside her bed. He said, "I got down on knees and I prayed first." He said, "Quite frankly, to be honest," as he was giving his testimony, "I did not believe one word I was saying. I knew God could, but I did not believe He would. So I prayed just to satisfy my wife." Then my wife started praying. And in seconds, she started screaming, "I can see! I can see!" He thought, "This is the most horrible thing my wife has ever done to me, pulling a trick like this on me." But just like that, she had received her sight. Since Billy Graham passed away, you can read that story actually in his book, Just As I Am. He put a chapter in the book of Marilyn Ford and how that she had received her sight, though she had been blind from birth, how she had received her sight in an instance. Bill Rice Ranch, when we were there, Billy Renstrom was the song leader, Bill Rice Ranch. He had been blind in the war and had been blind for years. But he had heard that there might be some hope, so we went after surgery. And Ruby, his wife, she said, "I didn't go with him when he went to Dallas for the final surgery because I've been through so many disappointments over and over and over again. So I did not go." When he came out of surgery, they unwrapped him. He called his wife and he says, "Can I ask you a question? Why do you have these ridiculous colored pajamas for me to wear?" And that's when it dawned on her he could finally see. And when you went to Bill Rice Ranch, he had enough sight to ride around on his motor scooter, though he had been blind for years. What I'm trying to tell you is this: God is able to do anything. My God is able. David's convinced of this because he's already seen God do things in the past, and so he's counting on God having done things in the past to do things in the present. My God is an able God. But read on a little bit further. In verse 32, "And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight this Philistine. I'm convinced my God is able. Thy servant will go." Now, he's been looking for someone to volunteer for 40 days. It would seem that Saul would say, "Hey, young man, amen. Hey, man, I've got wonderful news. This young man has decided that he would go and challenge their champion. This is wonderful news." But that's not what he said. Notice his response. Saul said to David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." Young man, you can't do it. I can't do it. I don't have any of my warriors, no matter how great they are, I have no warrior that will go into battle. And if we cannot do it, there's no way you can. I call that the spirit of discouragement. It can go through a ministry. It can go through an organization. Somebody says, "Hey, let's rise up and do something for God." Others say, "Oh, no, no, it can't be done." And they convince others, "It can't be done, and it can't be done." But I'm thankful for people like David, who in the midst of all the discouragement said, "You don't understand. I believe my God is able to do anything." But number two, my God's able to use me. Say that with me. My God is able to use me. My God is able. My God is able to use me. So let's take our finger again. We're going to do it like this. My God is able to use me. Everybody, so we don't feel like idiots. Are you ready? Here we go. My God is able to use me. You say, hold it. I agree with number one, my God is able to do anything. But I am not so confident on number two. If you understand number one, number two is a given. Watch carefully. My God is able to do anything except use me. You just said God's not able to do anything. You see, the interesting thing about this, it's not based on David. It's based on God. God is the one who is able. And he is so able, he can use anyone. Mike Palmer has been a longtime friend of mine. I first met Mike Palmer not too long after he had gotten saved. Mike had been a wealthy man. He had owned Arthur Treacher's fish houses. He had owned Burger King's. He had owned Photo Lambs up in the Dakotas. He actually sold the businesses, moved to California as a very wealthy man in his late 30s. But because of his sinful habits, he gambled it all away. And so he started working with a man who was in a church there in Southern California, Mike Apodaca, who was a plumber. Mike started attending an independent Baptist church there, just outside of San Diego. Not long after he had gotten saved, one of the Lester Roloff ministries came through, and the girls came to sing, to present their ministry. Lester Roloff, in case you do not know the name, he had many homes around the country for young men and young ladies who were troubled kids. Mike got a burden. Seeing that ministry, Mike moved to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and worked for 2 years in one of the Lester Roloff ministries. He felt God working with his heart, believing that he should go back to Southern California and start one of those ministries in Southern California. Mike had been saved at that time for 2 years. The pastor of the church said, "Mike, you can't do that. You'll just fall on your face. I mean, you've never been to Bible college. You've only been saved a couple of years. Mike, there's no way you can be successful with a ministry like this. And while the men of the church were trying to talk Mike out of it, the ladies of the church were trying to talk Patty out of it. But Mike took two girls into his home. That's when I met Mike. And I preached one whole week to two girls. But I saw the two turn to 20. I saw the 20 turn to 40. I saw the 40 turn to 60. I saw the 60 turn to 80. Still bringing the girls to church till they were filling up one whole side of the auditorium. And one day one of the deacons walked by. Mike, won't you get these derelicts out of here so we can make room for tithing members? So Mike goes to Ramona, California, buys another piece of property, starts Victory Baptist Church with Victory Christian Homes, and they continue to grow. I was on his board, had been on his board all the years. We started another in Rosarito Beach, Mexico, another in Jay, Florida. All the ministries grew. I preached every graduation they had for 25 years. And usually every year we'd have 12 to 20 girls every single year graduating, going off to Bible colleges. Though with all the discouragement, I'm thankful for people like Mike Palmer who says, no, my God is so able, He can use me. My God is able to use me. Look at verse 38. And Saul, yeah, if you're going to go, you're going to need armor. So Saul armed David with his armor. And he put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also, he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor and essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. Now, here's something you often see in Sunday school lessons. A misuse of the passage. Sometimes you see David swallowed up by Saul's armor that it was so big he could not wear it. That is not true. I do not believe at this point Saul is mocking David. Well, if you're going to go, you're going to need armor. And I believe my armor will fit you. Take note of this. David must have been a pretty good sized young man, because we know that Saul was. The Bible speaks of his height. He was head and heels above others, the Bible said. So David must have been a pretty good-sized young man. And so David puts the armor on. And as he has the armor on, he begins taking the armor off. I would have loved to have been there. People probably looking at him. Oh, those were big words a while ago. I'll go fight him. He's not going now. Yes, he is. No, he's not. He's taking the armor off. Yeah, no. He's not going to wear armor. No armor. No, he's not even going to take a sword. No sword. No. What's he going to do? I don't know. I heard somebody say he was going to throw rocks at him. Can't you hear somebody in the background saying, we ain't never done it that way before? Now, there's a statement often heard in churches. But just because you've never done it that way before does not mean that God, who can do absolutely anything, can use things you cannot imagine to accomplish His purposes. But David does have a plan. Verse 40, he took in his staff in his hand and chose five stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd bag which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. His plan, these stones that he has in a slingshot. Do you know what he's saying at this point? My God is able. My God is able to use me. And my God is able to use me as I am. Say it with me. My God is able to use me as I am. Say it again. My God is able to use me as I am. Saul, I'm not like you. You're a warrior. I'm not like my brothers. I'm not like all these other men that you have that are great warriors. I am not a warrior. I'm a shepherd boy. But I believe that God can use me as I am. Turn to the person sitting beside you and say these two words. Guess what? I don't have to be like you. And you can say that to the person that just said it to you. I do not have to be like anybody in this room. And nobody in this room has to be like me. All I have to be is what God made me, because God can use me exactly the way He made me, and God can use you exactly the way He made you, because God has not made a mistake in making any of us. God can use us exactly the way we are. You say, Brother Steve, you just don't understand. I don't have ability. I don't have all this personality. Great. God's got plenty. Because you see, it's not based on you. It's not based on me. It's based on a God who can do anything. And my God is so able to do anything, He can use me, and He can use me as I am. I often have the privilege to preach with David Ring. Some of you may know David Ring. David Ring has cerebral palsy. At the international ACE conventions, often he and I speak together. I've enjoyed David Ring for years and years and years. I met him in 1977, Memphis, Tennessee, Broadmoor Baptist Church. We're the same age. Our birthday's the same month. And over the years, I've just been amazed watching David Ring. I'm not making fun of David, but I'm going to leave this chair and walk to the pulpit as he would. I wish I could just stop the message, play a message that he preaches often, and just let you hear the message, because it'll turn you inside out. But rather than doing that, I'll just give you the title. Just the title of the message that I hear him preach over and over again. This is David Ring, Cerebral Palsy. I'm glad to be here to preach. The title of my message is, What Are You Belly Aching About? And when I hear that message, I realize I have nothing to bellyache about. I can talk, I can move, I can walk, but David has been used all around the world. We preach together in South Africa. We preach together in many conferences here in the state. David Ring, to me, is an illustration that God can use anybody exactly the way they are. The interesting thing about David Ring is that when he gives the invitation, usually half to three quarters of all the people in all of our meetings are at the altar immediately. David Peterson. David Peterson was a teenager. I am told by his mother he was shy, introverted, bashful, and backward. I think that pretty well covers everything. As a teenager, one Sunday morning he came forward in the service and knelt at the altar, and the pastor said, David, why'd you come? I believe God wants me to be a preacher. Immediately the pastor said, David, you must be mistaken. God could never use you. You don't have the wherewithal to be able to do that. Later, he told his parents why David had come to the altar. When they went out to eat, his own parents sat at the table and said, David, you probably are mistaken. God could never use you in that way. Well, of course, that discouraged him. That summer, they went to the Bill Rice Ranch. He was still dwelling on this, feeling that certainly God was calling him. Their youth group sat on the front rows. When he sat down one night, he said, God, if this is what you want me to do, would you somehow make it very clear to me? That night, the preacher was preaching, challenging young men for the ministry. And he said, young men, anybody in this room can be used of God in a great way if you're willing. And as he was walking around, he pointed to David Ring, whom he did not know, and said, son, would you stand to your feet? God can use you in the ministry like he can use anybody. Thank you. You can be seated. David said, I sat down and said, God, that was pretty plain. He went home and told his pastor what had taken place, and the pastor had enough sense to say, well, if you believe this is what God wants you to do, then go to Bible college and start making preparation. He went to Bob Jones University. He spent 4 years at Bob Jones University and graduated. When he graduated, no doors opened. He moved back to Land of Lakes, Florida, First Baptist Church, a small church running about 40 people. And he took a secular job. A few months after that, their pastor resigned and left. Others were coming in to preach. One Sunday, no one was coming. One of the deacons said, well, let's let David preach. David preached Sunday morning, Sunday night. Another week, others came in and preached. Another Sunday came and no one was there. David preached again. David Peterson has been the pastor of First Baptist Church in Land of Lakes, Florida, for 27 years, and it has grown from 40 to over 600. And I'll tell you this, he is still the shyest, most backward, most introverted person I have ever met in my life. I've preached there many times. My God is able to use me as I am. Well, I love reading the next portion, verse 44. We're going to see David speak to the Philistine. The Philistine speak to David. Watch this conversation carefully. Verse 44. And the Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give thy flesh to the fowls of the air, to the beasts of the field. He's finished. Now David speaks. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day the Lord will deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee, and I will take thy head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day to the fowls of the air, to the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth, not with the sword and the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Oh, he had a lot to say. Did you notice that those words seem to ooze with confidence? He is confident. My God is able. And my God is so able he can use me. And my God is so able he can use me as I am. And so David prepares himself for battle. Verse 48. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David, underline it, watch it carefully, hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Do you remember how the story started? They fled from him. And here's David running toward him. Send somebody to fight. I'm coming. I'm coming. He hasted and running toward it. And I ask people, is that the way we handle our problems? Oh, boy. I got a tough day ahead of me. I can't wait to handle all the difficulties of the day. I'll illustrate it like this. Young people, test. Let's go further than that. Exams. Remember that exam? The one you had to pass? The one you never studied for? How'd you wake up that morning? Oh, boy! I am going to school to fail! No, you woke up that morning with 13 diseases. Mom, Dad, I can't go to school today. But let's imagine you had a wonderful teacher. That's a wonderful thought. And let's imagine that the teacher gave you a copy of the test the day before with the answers. And it was 10 true and false questions. That was going to be the test. And all of them were true. Those were the answers. She says, this will be your exam tomorrow. Take it home and study it. So you go home and you study for hours. Number one, true. Number two, true. Number three, true. Number four, true. Work on it backwards. 10, true. 9, true. 8, true. Oh, boy. You wake up the next morning. Mom, Dad, wake up. I've got to go to school. It's only 3 o'clock. I know. But I can't wait to get to school. I'm going to make 100 today. What made the difference? You know you got this one in the bag. This is how David feels. He knows he's got this one in the bag. Why? Because my God is able to do anything. And my God's able to use me. My God's able to use me as I am. And my God is able to use me as I am right now. Let's get it on. Say it with me. My God is able to use me as I am right now. And actually, that one sentence is my whole message. Don't you wish I just said the sentence and went home? Say it with me again. My God is able to use me as I am right now. Dr. Sisk, one of his missions conferences, said there was a man that came to him and said, Dr. Sisk, I've been thinking about going on the mission field. Amen. Wonderful. Oh, Dr. Sisk, you don't understand. I'm 40 years old. If I go off to Bible college, I'll be 44 years old. He was an intelligent man. He could add. Dr. Sisk said, let me ask you a question. If you do not go to Bible college and do not prepare to serve God, how old are you going to be in 4 years? You're going to be 44 whether you go or whether you don't, so you might as well just go ahead and get busy. My God's able to use me as I am right now. So David hasted. He runs into battle. Verse 49. I, being from Mississippi, understand this verse. David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it. He done sling that stone in the direction of that there big man. He slung it. And notice. And smote the Philistine in his forehead. Right there. In his forehead. That the stone sunk into his forehead. It didn't hit and bounce off. It hit and it buried itself in his skull. Nothing had ever entered his mind quite like that before. But then notice. And he fell upon his face to the earth. It would seem that if a stone comes with that much force, that much inertia, that it would just drive him over backwards. But rather, it's an image of pow, pow. He falls on his face to the earth. If you do not have an explanation, I like mine better than I like yours. Let's go to the battlefield. On the battlefield, we see there's Goliath. He's a big man with a little bitty head. Is the battle one against one? No. The battle is two against two. Goliath has an armor bearer going before him bearing a shield. And then there's David. Who else is on the battlefield? God. But where? I don't see him. Let me ask you a question. Is David good with a slingshot? Yes or no? Cannot be proven. Don't miss this. He didn't have to be good with a slingshot. David was not counting on his ability. He's counting on God. Remember what David said? He will deliver you into our hands. It's not based on your personality. It's not based on your talent. It's based on a God who can do anything. Maybe God is just standing behind Goliath. Fire away! Who's to say the stone's on target? All God's got to do is move the head and line it up while it's coming. And it may be that when the stone got right there, it didn't have all that much force. God could take the head, pow, drive it into the stone, and then push him on his face to the earth. You say, is that what happened? I don't know. But it illustrates the fact that the battle is the Lord's. It's not David's battle. It's not my battle. It's not your battle. It's the Lord's. So David prevailed, verse 50. David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling, with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. Interesting time that word appeared. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine. Now, I'm in Alaska every year. I moose hunt. I've killed bear, I've killed moose. I've never run and jumped up on any of them yet. I don't know why he would do that. And took his sword, drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him. Did you notice verse 50 said he hit him with a rock and slew him? And then verse 51 said, when he cut off his head, he slew him. I'm not sure about verse 50. He may be just stoned in verse 50. But I'm pretty sure about verse 51. When he cut off his head, he slew him. And then I close with the last phrase because it's so interesting. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. One said, one pursues an adventure joyfully and effectively as long as one has not lost the hope of success. Ponder it as I say it again. One pursues an adventure joyfully and effectively as long as one has not lost the hope of success. A basketball team can be behind, but if they believe they can win this game, they'll play their heart out. But if they get so far behind that they say, there's no way we can win this game, they're finished. They're finished at that point. What happened to the Philistines? Hey, send someone to fight our champion. Nobody can beat him. Hey, Goliath, look who they're sending. They're sending a youth. Oh, Goliath, you're not going to have any trouble with him. Oh, hey, Goliath, look. He's coming with a slingshot. Hey, Goliath. Goliath, watch out. He's winding up. Here comes Goliath. Oh, ooh, lucky shot. They see Goliath fall. They haven't gone anywhere. Get up, Goliath. He's not hurt. He just tripped. Get up, Goliath. Goliath, he's running toward you. Hurry, get up. Goliath, he's on your back. Get up, you can throw him off. They see the sword rise. They see the sword fall. They see the head come off. He's not getting up. They just lost their hope. They fled. I want you to consider something. It's true in our generation, but it's also true in every generation, even from Bible times. People lose confidence in their God. Israel. I mean, they were spared over and over again, going through waters on dry ground. And yet, seemingly so soon after, forgot that God can do anything. Were fed from manna from heaven for days and days and days. And soon after, though they rejoiced during that time, soon after, forgot that God can do anything. Losing their confidence in God, who can do absolutely anything. I believe sometimes we lose our confidence, wonder if there's any solution to the problem we face. Wonder if there's any hope. That's because we have our eye on Goliath rather than God, who's much bigger. And anytime we put our eye and our focus on the situations of life that seem to bury us, we will be buried with no hope until we can turn our focus to a God who is bigger than all of our situations and realize with Him, there is always hope and always victory. My God is able. He's so able, He can do anything. He's able to use me. Just me. As I am. I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not. And He's able to use me as I am right now. It's all based on Him. I think sometimes it's a right and proper thing to come and say, God, I confess, I don't live my life believing. Sometimes I wallow in doubt, wondering if there's any hope. I think we ought to say, God, forgive me. Forgive me for looking at all the situations and taking my eyes off You. And I believe in any generation, if there's a point of reviving that is always needed, it's a focus on our God who can do anything. anything.